another edition of the Retail Sales Motivation Podcast. I'm your host, Baraka, and this weekly podcast is for all of you commissioned retail sales warriors out there working hard to turn every interaction into a sweet payday. This week, we're going to do something different. We're going to answer some mail. We're going to reach into the mailbag. I am not looking forward to, but I guess simultaneously looking forward to a root canal in a few hours. And I'm kind of drugged up on Tylenol right now to, you know, alleviate this mouth pain. But I wanted to not do what I did last week, which was play a motivational track. I got some feedback that, you know, you guys actually preferred some coaching and teaching from my podcast. So I hear you. I respond accordingly. And so I am going to give you some tips. So I've got a few questions here, and if you have a question that you'd like answered, please feel free to email us or go on our website and hit the contact button and submit your question there, or even post it on the discussion thread for each episode if it's specific to that episode. And yeah, I do read all of the questions that are submitted, and you know, I do try to respond. So let's get into it. Let's see. Rohit Gupta asked, how can I increase my sales? Well, that's a pretty straightforward question. Let me give you my best straightforward answer. To increase sales, you're looking at doing basically one of three things, or maybe a combination of them. You're either, one, increasing the number of customers you close, two, you're increasing the size of your orders, or three, you're increasing the frequency of repeat sales to those customers. When I talk about increasing the number of customers you close, that means I'm using, for example, a retail store. You're either taking more ups or you're getting more backs, you know, returned customers. That's what we call them in our store, B-backs. Or you're improving your skills. Okay. You're taking more ups. That's a traffic issue, right? So if you have more traffic coming through your doors and you're available for more of that traffic to take them as ups, okay? Or you're getting more B-backs, and that comes from your follow-up, right? So as you're following up with your existing customers, you're getting them to come back to the store and find you and ask for you to be able to, you know, add more sales to its existing customer base. And then three, improving your skills. Now that's tied directly to conversion. Okay. Out of 100 customers, if you're closing, you know, 10 of them, then that's a 10% conversion rate. So the more that you're able to close those customers that you're seeing, then the higher your conversion rate. And conversion is directly tied to your skills as a salesperson. Okay. So that's for increasing the number of customers you close. Then the second thing I said was increase the size of your orders, right? So that's either by building the ticket or discounting less. Okay. So either you're able to keep adding on to an order in order to build that ticket, or you are improving your skills so that you are not relying on discounting as much as you might be. If you're relying on discounting less, then you're selling at a fuller price, which means that the size of your order is naturally going to increase without you adding any additional products to it. Okay. Then the third thing I said was increasing the frequency of repeat sales to those customers. And that's directly tied to your skills in follow-up. And really, those skills are just about frequency, right? Just doing it more and more often, following up with your customers more and more to get them to come back into the store and ask for you. Okay. So another thing that I want to bring up besides those three things is, out of curiosity, are you selling what's in stock, which gives you an immediate payday, or are you building a pipeline of pending deliveries, which is a future payday? In our industry, and you know, I sell furniture, and so in our industry, the industry has been affected dramatically by supply chain issues. And so one of the things that our salespeople are getting really good at doing is advising people and counseling people to look at and consider items that are actually in stock that we can deliver out quickly within just a few days. But there are times when customers want something that may not be in stock right now, and they're placing an order for a future delivery. And that's great as well. When you do that, though, when you are taking orders for, you know, future delivery, then what you want to do is you want to look at your follow-up skills. Okay. Because if the order is pending, if I'm buying a dining room set, if I've ordered a dining room set that's not going to be delivered for 3 months, right? My salesperson then has the opportunity to contact me along the way. And just by, you know, engaging in conversation and continuing the rapport that we built and the relationship that we built when I was in the store, that salesperson is in a really good position to offer other items. So, for example, hey, while we're waiting for that dining room set, have we thought about what we're going to do in the living room to match that? You know, what's the next room on the list? The bedroom, right? I know that we talked about that in the store and we saw this bed and, you know, you wanted to hold off. I just wanted to let you know that bed is now available. It's now in stock. How about, you know, we add that to the order and get that in while we're still waiting for the dining room set? Things like that. You have the ability to add to the order, to build the ticket during that waiting period. Okay. And that's something that salespeople sometimes don't think about, but it's an opportunity there with an existing customer, right? So those are the things that I would consider when thinking about how I can increase my sales. Okay. So Rohit, I hope I answered your question. The next question is from Vivek San. And Vivek asks, as a salesperson, would you advise the customer to not buy your product if you think it isn't a good fit for the customer's needs? Well, I think that I would basically say, if the customer likes it, I love it. Meaning, I'm not going to substitute my judgment for the customer's judgment. Okay. If the customer is telling me, let's say I'm selling cars and the customer has six kids and, you know, the customer is looking at, she's looking at a Mustang. Okay. Now, do I know that six kids are not going to fit safely into a Mustang? I mean, you know, back in the day, at my parents' age, they probably, you know, just shoved all of us in the car and, you know, some of us were riding in the trunk. Some of us were, you know, sitting on laps and stuff. This was, you know, a much less safe period of American history growing up. But now, you know, everyone's got car seats and seat belts and airbags and all kinds of, you know, wonderful things to keep us, you know, safe in our bubbles. I know that, okay, the Mustang is probably not the best option for the customer, especially when the customer is telling me that, you know, she really, you know, needs something, you know, for basic transportation to, you know, take the kids to school and to activities and things like that, right? And I've shown her other options, right? I've shown her SUVs and minivans and, you know, just larger, you know, maybe some crossovers. And the customer keeps going back to the Mustang. At this point, am I going to advise the customer not to buy the Mustang? No. I've shown the customer all the options, the ones that I thought were more suitable to her needs. And if she's, you know, decided that she wants to buy the Mustang, well, you know what? Tiana, I am selling you a Mustang. All right. If the customer likes it, I love it. At the end of the day, it's the customer's decision. It's the customer's money. The customer is an adult, and I'm going to follow the customer's lead. I've done my job. I've, you know, advised them the best I could, and now it's about closing the sale. Okay, so yeah. Would you advise the customer to not buy the product if you think it isn't a good fit for the customer's needs?
If the customer is good with it, hey, I'm good with it too. Thanks for the question, Vivek. AE Jasmine sent the question, how does one make more sales to people after they've said no? Well, AE, it really depends on what question they answered no to. I mean, basically, bottom line, you need to understand if they're rejecting the product, the offer, or the entire transaction. Now, if it's the first two, you know, they're rejecting the product or the offer, then that means you didn't gather enough information to ascertain their needs. And that means that you can suggest alternatives that fit better, right? You know, it means that the conversation needs to continue. You need to ask more questions to really get down to, okay, what is it that they're needing? And, you know, here are the options that I can present, right? So that just means that you need to go back a few steps. Okay. If they're saying no to the entire transaction, right? Like, no, I'm not buying. No, no, no. Then all you can do at that point, I believe, is determine if that no means never or not now. Okay. It could be that they're saying, you know, nope, I don't like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am. And they are not interested in buying at all, right? Or is it that they're saying, you know, now's not a good time, you know, in the middle of closing on a house, or I'm in the middle of, you know, sending my kid off to school and paying a big tuition bill, or I have a huge tax bill, then that's a not now, right? And so you let the no guide your next questions, okay? But in any event, no doesn't need to be the final destination. It can just be a mile marker, all right? Yeah, that's the best answer I got for you. I hope that answered your question. Steven Rando asked, how do you close a lot of deals on the sales floor without having to rely on discounts constantly? It's eating into my margin, which means I'm less likely to get my kicker. Yeah, I hear you, Steven, and I really want to see if I can help you understand this a little differently, okay? I know that your sales manager, your manager, you've heard it on, you know, different videos, maybe you've, you know, read different books, and everyone talks about selling value, right? You know, sell the value, sell the value, sell the value. But what the heck does that mean? Let's see if I can try to help you through this. Okay. So discounting. Okay. Discounts are junk food in sales. All right. They're a quick and easy option when you're hungry to close a sale, but you're going to regret it later. All right. You just are. All right. It's something that, you know, later on, you're just going to feel like, oh, why did I do that? I didn't have to do that. Right. Now, me getting older, I'm starting to regret fast food, junk food a lot more often because I can't seem to burn it off as quickly as I used to. And my wife is telling me I need to stay in the gym every day. So I regret all that junk food that I had earlier. But anyway, back to your question. So you want to avoid the junk food, right? And by avoiding the junk food, you know, you're going to eat healthy. You're going to, you know, get more nutrition out of your food, right? So same thing. By avoiding the discount, you're going to get more commission out of that sale. But how do you sell the value? What does that actually mean? Think about it like this. If you spent 5 years building a 3-level, 10,000 square foot brick and stone masonry home on a scenic 200 acre wooded lot, it's got a private pond and it's got 5 bedrooms, each with a private bath. It's got a home theater, a gym, a rec room, it's got a heated pool and a separate pool house. It's got professional grade gore kitchen and an underground 20 car garage. Would you believe that that house is worth more than a second floor, 2-bedroom, 1-bath condo apartment downtown? I think you would, right? How would you describe that house to a prospective buyer? Would you be excited, right? Would you be proud to show it off, right? Would you point out every possible detail that you painstakingly included in this house because you built it? That feeling about that house, that's the value, the feeling that you have about your product. That's the value. And if you believe that that product is worth more than the asking price, you're asking for that house that you painstakingly built. If you believe that that property is worth, you know, $10 million and you're only asking for, you know, $500,000, you're going to believe that it's worth every penny plus, right? And that belief is going to be unconsciously communicated to the customer, all right? Even without you saying it. When they see it, right, it's $500,000, but they come and they see it and it's beautiful and it's like, oh my God, right? You're going to be on a different level when you're selling it emotionally, okay? Now, if you believe the price is too high, now the customer is going to pick up on that as well. And you're going to feed them unconsciously the information that, hey, you should be asking for a discount because I'm willing to give you one. Okay. That lack of belief in the value. All right. Now, I want to kind of go into this a little more, though, from something that I see, especially from maybe new salespeople who, you know, maybe are not hitting the, you know, $1 million seller level, things like that. They're not, you know, raking in the big bucks, and you're selling something that's maybe higher priced than you're used to paying for something, right? So if you're selling something that's way out of your personal price range, okay, I want to caution you, but your urge to sympathize with your customer, all right? Sympathy with your customer. See, because when you have sympathy for your customer, when that happens, you'll feel their pain, right? And that means you'll be eager to drop the price because you're going to feel, oh yeah, I understand completely that this thing is priced too high. Oh my God, it's way too, you know, it's expensive. It's not even worth that. Hey, yeah, let me drop the price for you. Let me discount that price. You might even offer a discount when the customer hasn't even asked for one. Okay, just because you subconsciously feel uncomfortable taking that amount of money for that product. Okay, you feel dirty doing it, right? Like you feel like you're scamming them. You feel sleazy, right? And that's really just about you transferring your emotional reaction to the price because you can't afford that. You're going to just feel like, oh, this is just, you know, way out of anyone's league. Let me help you out. And you'll honestly feel like you're helping the customer, that you're doing a good thing, that you're doing a good job, that you're on the customer's side. You're being a good advisor to them. I want you to instead think about empathy. Okay. I want you to empathize with your customer. The empathy is going to enable you to recognize their pain. Okay. You recognize that they're in pain, but you're not feeling that pain. You're just acknowledging that they are in pain. By doing that, that will enable you to objectively offer solutions that benefit everyone, okay? Because you're going to recognize not only that they're in pain, that empathy helps you to a solution. And that solution is more than likely going to be a better solution. It's going to be from a more objective standpoint than if you were sympathizing with the customer and you're feeling their pain, because in that situation, you're not necessarily trying to find a solution. You're just trying to stop the hurt. Okay. So that doesn't cure the problem. It just, you know, stops the symptom. But if you empathize with them, then you're more in tune with trying to solve the problem, to cure the disease. Okay. So sympathy, empathy. You don't want to sympathize with a customer. You want to empathize with them. Now, this whole thing is really important. This question really is important during a period of rapid price increases on seemingly everything, right? Like right now, that's what we're going through. It just seems, you know, bacon is just out of control. Sorry for my Muslim friends. I know that you're in the middle of Ramadan, Ramadan Mubarak, but the prices, they're just, you need to be more transparent. Well, let me rephrase that. You may need to be more transparent with your customer about why the price is higher than normal, okay? And why they should still buy now, Okay. The transparency might be about the supply chain. It might be about freight costs. It might be about labor costs. Whatever it is that is spiking your prices higher than maybe they were before for those same items. Being prepared to have that conversation and being transparent, it makes you more of a trusted advisor. It puts you on the side of the customer. And while you're not asking for forgiveness for the price increases, because business is business, helping the customer understand why the prices are increasing the way they are can help them see that they're still getting value for their dollar because they're paying for whatever the price increases, you know, being caused by. You know, they're paying for the extra freight charges to get the product in. They're paying for the higher labor costs to manufacture the product or to get the product sold, you know, whatever it is, right? That's built into the price and they understand that. They just need you to sometimes, you know, spell it out for them and then they're good. I hope I answered your question. I know that was a long answer, but I do believe that if you can get better at selling the value, you will make more money overall. It doesn't mean that you won't ever discount. I mean, unless you're in an environment where they don't ever discount, but based on your question, I'm thinking that you're in an environment where they do discount. But if you can improve your skills in other areas, you will beat those people who are discounting everything on the floor. All right, last question. Michael Williams asked, what do the best salespeople know that the rest of us don't? To answer this question, I'm going to relay a story that was told by really a good guy, Ian Matthews. He has a podcast called Let Me Speak to Your Manager or something like that. I got to look it up. But yeah, it's a good podcast. And he owns a consulting company and everything in the DC area. But he told a story and I want to kind of convey it and I hope I don't butcher it. But it makes the point that I want to make. Let's see. So he says that 2 years ago, I was planning a trip to Florida with my son to watch baseball during spring training. We had two tickets to two games, both near Disney theme parks in Orlando. After talking with some parents in the office, I decided to squeeze in some time at a park. Every person said some version of the same thing, which was, your son will love it, but be careful, Disney gets expensive fast. So I did some research online, attempting to figure out the best park for my son, who was 6 years old at the time. He loves Star Wars, and the Hollywood Studios park had attractions right up his alley. Looking online, I saw that 2 one-day passes would cost $251. I told my boss that I was planning to call for tickets, and he laughed. Yeah, that's where you're starting, but no way you get off that phone paying for just 1 day passes. Determined to prove him wrong, I put up my shield and made the call. Now, Disney sales associates are well-trained. They know their properties well and have an excellent feel for what's critical to parents. More importantly, they know what children want. Now, I called because I had some questions and didn't want to spend $251 online without knowing what that price actually entailed and included. So I made the call with one hand covering my wallet, determined to pay no more than $251. As a career sales leader, I knew their Jedi mind tricks and I wasn't about to fall for any of them. Hi, this is Kelly. Thanks for calling Disney. How can I help you today? Hi, I'm looking to purchase 2 one-day passes to Hollywood Studios. Sure, I can help with that. When are you going to be in town? March 15th to March 18th. I'm taking my son to see the Tigers play in spring training. We're going to squeeze in a quick trip to the park. How fun! My son plays baseball and we go to as many spring training games as we can. You're going to love it. Not bad. Kelly found something in common with me quickly. We're both parents, our boys love baseball, and she is experienced with spring training. What games are you planning to see? We have tickets for a 1 p.m. game in Lakeland on Wednesday and a 4 p.m. game in Orlando on Friday. Great! Are you planning to go to Hollywood Studios on Thursday? Yep, just 2 one-day passes, please. Why did you choose Hollywood Studios? He loves Star Wars, and it looks like most of the attractions work for a 6-year-old. Oh, he'll love Hollywood Studios if he's a Star Wars fan. Who's his favorite character?
Darth Vader, of course. He likes the bad guys more than the heroes.
My son is the same way. He was Darth Vader for Halloween 2 years in a row. We have one of those helmets where his voice changes when he talks. We do too. Those are hilarious, but Chewbacca is funnier. Hey, wait a second. I see what's happening here. I put my guard down. She's building rapport with me by getting me to talk about someone important. Nice try, Kelly. My guard is all the way back up now. Anyway, that's the park and the date. Can I give you my credit card?
Of course. First, how patient is your son?
Not patient at all. He's 6. Why do you ask? She's piqued my interest with a loaded, closed-ended question. I mean, what 6-year-old is patient?
Well, you are visiting us during spring break. Have you ever been to one of our parks during spring break?
No, I haven't been to Disney since I was a kid.
Well, aside from Christmas break, it's our busiest period of the year. Lines are going to be long for the main attractions, and especially Star Wars, as those are all new.
After asking for permission, she presented new information to consider. She's an expert on Disney theme parks, and I know very little. All right, I'll bite. How long are the lines that time of year?
We went to Hollywood Studios last March, and the wait was 90 minutes for Star Tours. Most of the big attractions were 60 to 90 minutes. We had the Fast Pass, so we didn't wait in most of those lines.
Now, before I can even ponder this new problem, she casually brings up a solution. And this is not just any solution. She offers one that she's used personally. I know what you're up to, Kelly, but I'm in too deep. Okay, tell me about the Fast Pass. She goes ahead and explains the ease of scheduling, the app that allows me to schedule times ahead of time, the ability to jump to the front of the line, and waiting 15 minutes versus 90 minutes. And without talking price, she jumps into another question.
You said the game is at 4 p.m. on Friday. What are you two going to do all day?
I'm not sure. We'll get to the stadium early for some autographs, and maybe we'll go check out Disney Springs in the morning.
Disney Springs is great if you're into shopping. It also has great restaurants.
Kelly, does your son like going there?
For a meal, yes. Other than that, it's not his favorite.
What is his favorite?
He loves the Disney water parks. The lines are shorter, and he's tall enough to get on all of the rides.
My son loves water parks too. She's adding value and earning my trust. I no longer care that she's selling. I picture riding water slides with my son before the game on Friday in the Florida sunshine.
We have a Park Hopper pass that allows you to visit multiple parks as much as you like during a 2-day time frame.
Another solution to a problem I just realized that I had. Nothing to do on Friday before the game. You know, that sounds good, Kelly. We'll do that. I don't ask how much the Hopper Pass is before agreeing to it. I'm still skeptical that the Fast Pass will work as she claims. I ask a few more questions.
If you Google Fast Pass while we're on the phone, you can see reviews from people online. It's one of Disney's best values.
Wow. Her confidence is compelling. I didn't bother Googling because she knows what I'll find. She uses social proof expertly to convince me that her product is worthy.
FastPass sounds like the way to go.
Anything else I'm not thinking about? Kelly's educated me so much on this call that I no longer have confidence that I know what I want. I'm prompting her to sell me more.
How early do the two of you wake up?
Early.
We offer an opportunity to get to the parks an hour before everyone else, where lines fly by. My family does this from time to time, and you can hit several of the biggest attractions before there are any lines. We call this the Magic Morning Package.
I weigh this latest offering against a big pancake breakfast, a favorite pastime for the two of us. I also think through the logic in rushing a young boy out the door in the morning against the busy schedule for the rest of the day. You know, Kelly, I think we'll pass on that. Finally, I resisted an upsell attempt.
Okay. I have 2 multi-day park hopper passes and 2 fast passes.
My initial attempt at $251 for 2 one-day passes has now more than doubled. The park hopper passes were an extra $100, and the 2-day passes were an additional $100, and 2 fast pass tickets were an extra $120.
Can I ask where you're staying?
This line of questioning led me to change my hotel from a non-Disney property to staying at the Animal Kingdom, another strong upsell by Kelly. All told, that call added at least $500 to what I was budgeting.
The trip was amazing. We flew through lines over those 2 days. The fast pass was precisely what she said it was, and I felt the value every time we walked past a long line directly into an attraction. The weather was perfect for a water park on Friday, and we spent 4 hours at Blizzard Beach riding water slides with no lines before heading straight to the baseball game. My son loved Animal Kingdom. We woke up every morning and looked off the porch to see giraffes, zebras, and other zoo animals. Staying at a Disney hotel also gave us access to the bus system, which we used at night to go to Disney Springs for dinner. With limited time to check out what Disney had to offer and massive crowds, the extra cost was worth it. We got value out of every upsell. Now, had I just purchased 2 passes online, I would have saved money, but how much fun would we have missed out on? So, that's the story. The question was, what do the best salespeople know that everyone else doesn't? And you know what? I'm going to let him answer that question as well. Ian said, elite salespeople understand that you get what you pay for. They're an expert in the value that their offering brings, and they help you see that value before making a mistake in the purchase process. Was Kelly trying to sell me more? Of course. Did she sell me anything she didn't believe in? Nope. Her process was textbook. So much that I wanted to call back later and find her. I would have hired her in a second. What did she do that was effective? 1, she found common interests. 2, she built rapport and earned my trust. 3, she asked great questions. 4, she helped me see potential problems I wasn't thinking about. 5, she created tension to make me seek a solution. And 6, she demonstrated how her solution fixed my problem. She acted like a consultant who was 100% focused on the experience I would have with her company and the product. At no time did I ever feel like I was being sold. I got on the phone thinking of her as an opponent and got off thinking of her as an ally. Here's the key. The best salespeople make you feel good about buying. In a prior episode, I talked about how customers want to buy. Buying makes us feel good. What you want to do as a salesperson is you want to give your customer permission to do the thing that they came to do in the first place, which was buy, right? You want to not focus on how do I sell to this customer? You want to focus on how do I make it easy for my customer to buy from me? If you're focused on how to make things easier for the customer, that changes your entire mindset. And you can end up building the great experience that Ian had buying those tickets to Disney. I thought that was a phenomenal example, and I thought it answered the question better than I could have. So that's it. Those are the questions. I hope that I answered them. This week's affirmation is short and sweet. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. Accept that you don't know what you don't know and ask someone for tips and advice on how to increase your commissions. If you're constantly learning and constantly applying what you've learned, you'll constantly grow and so will your commissions. Have a great week.
If you want a thing bad enough to go out and fight for it, to work day and night for it, to give up your time and your peace and your sleep for it, if all that you dream and scheme is about it, and life seems useless and worthless without it, if you'll gladly sweat for it and fret for it and plan for it and lose all your terror of the opposition for it, and if you simply go after that thing that you want with all of your capacity, strength and sagacity, faith, hope, confidence, and stern pertinacity, if neither cold poverty, nor famine, nor gout, nor sickness, nor pain, nor body, nor brain can keep you away from that thing that you want, if dogged and grim you besiege and beset it, with the help of God, you'll get it.
Please. Ladies, are you looking to move your office from your kitchen table to a space of your own? Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Are you looking for co-working and community? Well, then come join us at the Women's Business Center, RBA, located at 1510 Willow Lawn Drive, Suite 100, directly across the street from the Kroger at Willow Lawn. Visit us on the web at WBCRVA.com or on social media at WBCRVA. When you're ready for more than just office space, come join the WBCRVA family.